That tells you all you need to know about the state of free thought on college campuses. Administrators should have learned the lesson by now. If you think I'm crass and boorish and a cancer on your school's intellectual life, how about you start hiring more conservative academics? Because if you just leave it to the students, you're going to end up with a lot more people like me. Epilogue. How to be a dangerous faggot, even if you're not gay. Over the next decade, social justice warriors and busybodies are going to be beaten into submission by the forces of freedom and fun. We're going to win. And it's not thanks to a ferocious conservative press, they've done nothing, or killer political candidates, because the party's done nothing, or great Republican authors and thinkers, because they, too, have done nothing. It's you, buying this book, laughing at the crybabies on Twitter and Facebook, and finally throwing your hands up in disgust and saying, enough. From college students sick of attending mandatory consent workshops and learning 42 new gender pronouns, to video game fans who just want to be left alone, the past couple of years have shown the power of ordinary people to defy elites and radically alter the cultural consensus. We're nowhere near sick of winning yet, and I'm filled with excitement when I imagine what brilliant conquests our gang of deplorables will achieve next. The moon landing? Pah! There's no more exciting time to be alive than now. We're living in an age of heroes, of villains, and of revolution, and no one quite knows where the next uprising will come from. The attempt to stifle cultural expression has gotten so bad that even leftists are getting sick of it. Leonel Shriver, author of We Need to Talk About Kevin, is one of the most accomplished leftist authors in the world. In 2010, she authored So Much for That, a book about a man who has to sell his business and give up his dreams to pay for his sick wife's healthcare costs. It's essentially a critique of the pre-Obamacare American model of private healthcare. Yet even Shriver has figured out that something has gone terribly, disastrously wrong with identity politics. Her keynote speech at the Brisbane Writers' Festival in September 2016, which she delivered wearing a sombrero, was an evisceration of the left's new obsessions: identity, cultural appropriation, and feelings. She went as far as to call the identitarian left the culture police and announced a sincere desire for them to go away soon. She said, quote, "I'm hopeful that the concept of cultural appropriation is a passing fad. People with different backgrounds rubbing up against each other and exchanging ideas and practices is self-evidently one of the most productive, fascinating aspects of modern urban life." Shriver also committed what is, for a leftist, an unforgivable sin. She explained the actual reasons for the rise of Donald Trump. She said, "The left's embrace of gotcha hypersensitivity inevitably invites backlash. Donald Trump appeals to people who have had it up to their eyeballs with being told what they can and cannot say. Pushing back against a mainstream culture of speak no evil suppression, they lash out in defiance, and then what they say is pretty appalling." End quote. Shriver's speech was an important moment, thanks to her stature in the world of left-wing literature, but she was just one of many liberal-leaning creators who have begun to speak out against the regressive left. Other renowned authors like my literary hero Bret Easton Ellis have also spoken up. The human imagination cannot help but rebel against the shackles that the regressive left would seek to put on it. The cultural libertarian revolution, therefore, is only just beginning. Like you, I am sick of the odious blue-haired fucks on college campuses. I'd rather be at home watching Netflix, sucking off my boyfriend, or spending thousands of dollars in Louis Vuitton. I do what I do because I have to, because no one else can or will right now. And until perhaps this book gets out there and inspires the next generation of culture warriors, I remain necessary. I have to go through the motions day after day, absorbing the vitriol from the media and idiotic protesters, because every other conservative and libertarian figurehead has utterly failed you. I like to think I'm like Cincinnatus, the Roman general who dropped his plow to lead an army to victory and secure the safety of his homeland before immediately returning to the farm and his slave girls. In my case, it would of course be a harem of Nubian catamites, but otherwise the picture is the same. In my heart of hearts, I want to declare victory, or at least to pass the baton on, so I can go back to the chaise longue and indulge myself in silk and champagne. But I know that will never happen in my lifetime, so I'm resigned to the fight. I will wage war, so long as there are dykes in gender studies departments telling lies about innocent young boys, as long as Black Lives Matter activists are attacking people for their skin color, and as long as Britney has to withhold music videos because her managers are worried they aren't feminist enough. I will fight so long as free expression and creativity are at risk from thick-as-pig-shit New York bloggers and social justice activists. I've always felt an acute sense of personal ordainment, as though my life was meant for something greater. I think it's why I always related to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I feel like the chosen one. I was chosen to fight the dark forces that pervade our world. And as long as America needs me, I am yours. At least for now, I'm rejoicing, because together we have struck a savage blow in what will be a decades-long fight to reclaim creative freedom and freedom of speech from the political left. And I'm talking, of course, about the election of Daddy. It was 1:40 a.m. on November 9th, 2016, and I was in New York, giggling uncontrollably. I was giggling because the Associated Press had just called Pennsylvania for Trump. I could imagine the looks of bewilderment, despair, and outrage on the faces of the mainstream reporters, covering the results just a few hallways away from me, and it made me laugh uncontrollably. The West was not doomed to die an ignominious death at the hands of open-border-obsessed globalists. I was giggling because it looked, finally, as though we might win. The earthquake, heralded by the election of Donald J. Trump, had been a long time coming. It was the culmination of nearly 30 years of hectoring from both the mainstream left and the mainstream right about how we should shut up if we knew what was good for us, about how we need to make up for a history of racism, sexism, and every other phobia under the sun, sins committed by our parents' parents, and our parents' parents' parents, despite the fact that we, ourselves, did nothing wrong, about how entertaining this dangerous thought or making that dangerous joke would be the end of our social lives, the end of our romantic entanglements, and would result in the destruction of our professional careers. Well, it turns out that the real danger lies in not daring to be dangerous. I dare to be dangerous every day, and I can't stop winning. My ascendancy has marked the overturning of an old order. Gamergate bloodied the leftist vigilante squads on social media and their friends in the press. Brexit put a stake through the heart of the bureaucratic globalist European Union. And then Donald Trump came to annihilate 30 years of politically correct consensus in the United States. Leftists think 2016 was the worst year ever, and not just because so many of their favorite celebrities died. Given the scale of their political defeats, they have some justification, but they're also pessimistic by nature. These are the people who believe that racism is worse than it's ever been. Of course it isn't. That rates of sexual assault on college campuses approximate the Congo. Of course it doesn't. And that Brexit is going to herald World War III, which of course it won't. Steven Pinker, a sensible liberal, reminds us that this is not the case. The world continues to get better, and it has been doing so for some time. As he ceaselessly reminds a pessimistic public, extreme poverty, child mortality, illiteracy, and global inequality are at historic lows. Vaccinations, basic education, including girls, and democracy are all-time highs. Rates of murder, violence, sexual assault, and other crimes in the West also continue to fall. Socially, the millennial generation is the most tolerant ever, and our current president is the most gay-friendly man ever elected to the presidency. Now that leftists are out of power, America is on track to be less divided, safer, and more stable than ever before. By the time the next election rolls around, I predict Democrats will struggle to downplay the nation's success. If you want to be a dangerous faggot, here are my tips. 1. Never apologize. The left delights in extracting apologies from the victims of public shaming. From Jack the Southern Avenger Hunter to Justine Sacco, one of the first signs of leftist victory is the sight of someone verbally flogging themselves in public. Like prisoners emerging from Big Brother's torture chamber in Room 101, you can expect to see the phrases that mark a broken spirit. I'm sorry. I'll try to do better. I'm learning to be a better person every day. Thank you, mob of faceless internet vigilantes, for educating me. If you want to win, the first step is not to admit defeat. The only exception to this rule, as I discovered, is that if you say something you didn't intend to, and people are left thinking you meant something you don't, then it's worth issuing a clarification. But in general, simply don't apologize. 2. Work harder than everybody else. I'm not the best because I'm the funniest or the smartest or the most attractive person among conservative and libertarian celebrities. I'm the best because I work harder than everybody else, because I surround myself with people who are smarter than I am. I love to bang on about Mariah Carey, but my real idol is Madonna. Madonna isn't the best singer or dancer in the world, but she's the hardest working person in the business, or at least she was for a while. And that was the case for decades. Like me, she's just above average at everything. Like me, she's a great talent scout and has terrific instincts for what's coming next. And the same goes for Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian, which is why I'm obsessed with both of them. You don't have to be born with preternatural talents like Billie Holiday or Dusty Springfield. You just have to show up to work and resolve every day to destroy the competition. You can be number one through sheer force of will. This book and my career are proof of that. 3, stay humble. I'm the best at being humble. Nobody can touch my modesty, so be like me and stay grounded. 4, be twice as funny as you are outrageous. Anyone remember how the alt-right died? An idiot called Richard Spencer took control of the movement. Spencer is offensive and hateful without being funny. He does his best to emulate the wittier elements of the movement, cringingly referencing Pepe and meme magic in his speeches, but it doesn't fool anyone. In the early days of the alt-right, tweeters were having fun with forbidden ideas. Spencer was having forbidden and bad ideas about things, and then trying to transplant the fun in afterwards. I want people to be allowed to make jokes about and to discuss anything. I don't think people should be ostracized for doing so. I don't fear the ideas of people like Spencer, nor do I feel the need to hide them from view. I have enough trust in ordinary people to examine and reject bad ideas on their own, because sunlight is the best disinfectant. I will always defend the right of people to make jokes about whatever they choose to, and mercilessly attack people who want to destroy the lives of 20-somethings over alt-right memes and 4chan trolling campaigns. Be twice as funny as you are outrageous, because no one can resist the truth wrapped in a good joke. 5, not an argument. This one doesn't come from me. I've stolen it from the Canadian philosopher Stefan Molyneux. Molyneux, who frequently dabbles in dangerous topics like race, intelligence, anarchism, and religion, has said this so often on his YouTube channel that it's become his own meme. Simply put, when someone calls you names, as the left is so fond of doing, there's no need to be upset, ruffled, or apologetic. These are just outbursts of moral indignation, full of sound and fury, but signifying nothing. If you make a point or reveal a fact and someone responds with cries of racist, sexist, homophobe, or that offends me, these are just the ways that the left now spells heretic, coolly respond with that now immortal phrase, not an argument. 6, facts over feelings. In this book, you will have encountered already several excellent examples of what the internet calls hate facts. You now know, for instance, that black gang violence eclipses police violence as a threat to black lives. You will now know that the fabled rape culture on college campuses doesn't exist, and that the gender pay gap is also a myth. You will know that being fat isn't healthy, although quite frankly, I think most of you are smart enough to have figured that out already on your own. You should never miss an opportunity to spread these facts around, especially if you're at college. Your peers are currently living in one of the most brainwashed eras in our history. The media, academia, and pop culture are all working overtime to get them to believe things that simply are not true. They're offended when this fragile worldview is confronted with reality, which is one of the reasons so many of the younger generation today retreat into safe spaces. But you cannot spare their feelings. The only way to beat propaganda is to spread truth, and you must spread that truth faster than the lies. Facts over feelings, which brings me to my favorite rule of all. 7, seek attention. People often accuse me of being an attention seeker. Guess what? They're right. Or at least mostly right. I may be a flamboyant, egotistical, attention-whoring diva fag, but all my flouncing, valley girl craving for attention also serves a noble purpose. It draws attention to my arguments, my principles, and the causes I champion, as well, of course, to my impeccable sense of style and Adonis-like good looks. One of the mistakes libertarians make endlessly is that they assume people actually read their brilliant essays on why roads should be privatized. I mean, they're probably flawless, but that doesn't mean they're interesting, and it doesn't mean that anyone is paying attention. I've galvanized a movement because I know how to put on a good show. I don't turn up on stage and reel off a list of paid talking points. I turn up on stage dressed as Marilyn Monroe, have my deputy slap me in the face with whipped cream, throw up a slideshow of the hottest and spiciest memes of the moment, and then I reel off a list of talking points after I've made sure that no one at the back is still sleeping. We live in an age where the competition for attention is getting tougher and tougher. Half a century ago, everyone watched the same channels on TV because that's all there was to watch. But now there are thousands of channels, YouTube feeds, books, games, and websites all competing for the public's eyeballs. If what you have to say is important, you have to know how to get people listening. 8. Be hot. This sounds difficult, but it's actually very important. You've got to be hotter than your opponents. See, we live in an age of fat acceptance and the celebration of the mediocre, a high school sports day where everyone gets a prize. No. Don't settle for second best. Hit the gym, go on a diet, go to a tanning salon, then stop wasting money at McDonald's and spend it at Louis Vuitton instead. Advocate for tax exemptions for anyone under 12% body fat. Keep in mind that it is not hard to be hotter than many of your opponents, so you don't even have a good excuse, but you should aim for Tommy Lahren, not Lena Dunham. Always keep women worried you might steal their boyfriends when they're not looking, and always keep men worried your dicking skills surpass their own. Be hot. 9. Have fun. This is one of the most important requirements of being a dangerous faggot, and probably the number one reason why I win. What do leftists do when they get together? Sit in a circle and share their feelings. They'll talk about how unsafe they feel and gently pat each other on the shoulders. In public, they'll get angry, yell slogans, and whine about how offended they are by our side's words. They don't look like they're having much fun, do they? Establishment conservatives do a little better on the sense of humor scale, but you can never escape the feeling that they'd rather be at a Heritage Foundation speaker event. Like the leftists, they can be dreadfully serious. My followers win because they know politics isn't everything. That's why they mistrust overly serious establishment conservatives. And that's why they're so at odds with the left, who wish to politicize everything from video games to simple pop songs. My whole career so far has been an experiment in identity politics, designed to reduce the left to tears and incoherence. And I have. Who knows? Maybe one day I'll come out as straight, and then we can all laugh at how I pulled the wool over their eyes. In the meantime, no one wants to hang out with squares. They want to go to the party with blackjack and hookers, not the one with Scrabble and Diet Coke. And right now, we're throwing the best party in town. So have fun. 10. Be dangerous. We live in an age where one side of the political spectrum would like all debate, all challenge to their viewpoints, all diversity of thought to be snuffed out. Why? Because they're scared. Scared that their political, social, and cultural consensus, carefully constructed and nurtured over the past 3 decades, with its secular religions of feminism, enforced diversity, multiculturalism, and casual hatred for straight white men, is built on a foundation of sand. They have watched as the threats to their order and the worldview it represents multiply. They have watched the dream of multiculturalism die at the hands of Islam, despite all their efforts to downplay and cover up the atrocities. They have watched as the idea of socially constructed genders and races, once dogma in the academy, starts to fade into irrelevance and incoherence, swept away by a new wave of research on the innate roots of our identities, despite all their attempts to suppress it. They have seen their stranglehold on culture, once so steely and strong, slip away. Comedians have grown tired of the new language codes. Movie directors and video game designers are fed up with demands for diversity quotas. Artists, ever longing to provoke and challenge, are slowly waking up and realizing that to be left-wing today is to be a member of the establishment. It's a scary time to be a leftist, so it's little wonder that I'm considered to be dangerous with my mild demands for free speech on campus, my fact-based objections to feminism and Black Lives Matter, and my wariness of the sexism and homophobia that drifts slowly westward from the swamp of modern Islam. Those who are frightened of free speech, whether it's ideas and facts that challenge their side or jokes that prod at their carefully constructed social taboos, are almost always frightened of something else. It's not the speech or even the so-called hurt feelings that bother them. It's the nagging concern that plagues all defenders of fact-free dogma, that they might be wrong or they might be unpersuasive. And they just can't handle that. Well, don't worry about it. You don't need to convince them. You're responsible for your own mind, not theirs. So use it. Be dangerous. Read all the books that your college is too afraid to stock in the library, like this one. Find the thinkers and the writers and the artists who have been shamed out of the mainstream, and find out why they were. You won't have to look far, because I'm bringing them to you with my new publishing imprint, Dangerous Books. But get together with your friends and pledge to be as dangerous as possible. You might not ever be a gay Rosa Parks or a Jewish Martin Luther King Jr. like me, but you can make a dent. You're already listening to a book you're not supposed to. Go watch a movie you're not supposed to watch. Or better yet, go make a movie you're not supposed to. Write a song you're not supposed to. Design a video game you're not supposed to. Write a blog you're not supposed to. Discuss ideas you're not supposed to. Go on social media and tell a joke you're not supposed to. Share a meme you're not supposed to. State some facts you're not supposed to. Be dangerous. Like that hot guy on the cover.
This is the end of the audiobook presentation of Dangerous by Milo Yiannopoulos. Copyright 2017, Milo Worldwide, LLC. For more information on this and other Dangerous books, visit dangerous.com. And thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.